Last week as we began, we had several visitors. As I look around this week, not quite as many, a little more sparse. As most, as all of you then know, we have been studying from the book of John. And as we make a few introductory and review type comments, we'll pick up a little bit from chapter 1, pick up a little bit from chapter 3, and then we'll move to chapter 6, where we'll start this morning. But we know from chapter 1, we find out that we have Jesus. He is introduced as the Word and as the Light. We find His relationship with Christ as the Word and as the Light. He was in the beginning with God, and He was God. He was in the creation. All things were made by Him. Without Him was nothing made that was made. And we see then, not only do we find the relationship of God, of Christ to God, but we find the relationship of Christ to man, and God to man through Christ. We see that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. He declared God to man. He shone in a world of darkness. He was the light who came into a world of darkness. We find that we as humans have the right to become the children of God through Him and through believing on His name. These are some of the main ideas we have from chapter 1. We also, last week, were emphasizing, and those took the first 2 weeks, really, as we talked about the first 18 verses of chapter 1. Last week, we talked about the importance of believing, the idea of, in chapter 20, verse 31, that these were written that we might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing we might have life in His name. And we established that as the very foundation of this book, including then last week we used the example of Nicodemus in chapter 3, finding that Nicodemus did believe. He knew that he was a man of God because of the things that he did. And also we find that Jesus taught him. And one of the main things that he taught him was that to enter into the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven, one must be born again. And he clarified that to mean to be born of the Spirit and of the water. So that's where we are, and of course we're beginning to go into various places. This is not necessarily a chronological study, but we're hitting on some high points from this. The next high point that we wanted to hit on then were the seven I Ams found in the book of John. As a matter of fact, we will go to chapter 6 in a moment to establish that, but it is interesting to kind of note overall that this is not the only place in the Bible that talks about I Ams. I didn't establish this and verify it, but one article that I was reading talked about some of the other I Ams of the Bible and how in the multiples of seven. For instance, in Genesis, there are seven examples of I Am. We find in Exodus, according to this study anyway, that there were 21 examples of I Am. There were multiples of seven then in the Psalms, in the prophets of Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel. All of these have examples just like this of I Am. And then there is also Revelation. Seven examples in Revelation, according to this person who wrote this, and making the comment, it's kind of all around the idea of the Alpha and the Omega. I am the Alpha and the Omega. And if you think about that in connection with John, Jesus was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him. He was the Alpha from the beginning. But also the purpose is to bring salvation to man. He will be at the very end as well. He truly is the author and the finisher of our faith. And so, kind of understanding that these seven I Ams that we find in the book of John, while they're very important in conveying who Christ is, it's not the only example, so we kind of broadened it perspective-wise to understand that there are many different examples in the Bible, and that could be a study of itself, of the many I Ams of the Bible in relation to this. Now, we're going to be focusing in a minute, especially on the I Ams of the book of John. One other comment I might make in relation to this is, you know, you can think of I Am in at least two different ways. One of it, you can think of it just the most basic term is he's saying this is a part of who I am. It's a verb introducing a statement about his identity. But it's also, you could say, an echo, and this is a quote here, an echo of the divine nature. What we find is, as God has revealed himself to man in all of these other places that I mentioned too, and now here in the book of John, as Jesus introduces or reveals himself to man, he says, I am this. This is, in a sense then, this echo of his divine nature. And so, if we're going to believe, we need to know who Jesus is. And one of the best places to go is here in the book of John with these descriptions. Jesus says, I am this. As we begin in the book of John, or in chapter 6 of John, first we'll just hit on the high points of what we will discuss today. I'm not going to hit all seven, but I'll start with, say, the first four. We remember Jesus says, I am the bread of life. As He is the bread of life, we're seeing something that's internal. We're not just seeing bread that you make in the oven or bread that you may touch, but bread that you ingest. Bread that you eat, in spiritual terms anyway, and it's bread that you digest. It's something that is inside of you and that changes you. Inside, as we become Christians, it is this bread of life that will change us and that will give us eternal life. We find that He is the light. Here we find, in a sense, something that's external. As He's the light, He shines in darkness. He allows us to follow Him and to see the way because of that. We find He's the door of the sheep, and we find He is the good shepherd as well. Let's go ahead and come back to chapter 6 and begin our exploration. Again, it's John chapter 6, verse 35, where it specifically says, I am the bread of life. But before we get there, let's just kind of hit the context a little bit. We see, as the sixth chapter of John begins, we see many who are gathered to Jesus because of what they've seen Him do and to hear His teaching. And we find here in the first 14 verses, the feeding of the 5,000. As all these were gathered, it was time to eat. Many people then were brought together. We find the young boy who had the food, and the 5 loaves and 2 fishes were distributed among the people. And by the time all was said and done, in verse 13, we find that there were 12 baskets left over. Okay, so this was certainly an impressive feat in showing Jesus' power. Here, I'd like for you to note verses 14 and 15. And you know, I really hadn't noticed these verses in particular until this study. Somebody, if you will, read verse 14, and then also read verse 15.
Then those men, when they had seen the sign that Jesus did, said, This is truly the prophet who is to come into the world. Therefore, when Jesus perceived that they were about to come and take Him by force to make Him king, He departed again to the mountain by Himself alone.
So Jesus performs this miracle here. Many people saw it, and they were astonished by it. When they saw this in verse 14, they saw the miracle or the sign that He did, and many then believed, this is of a truth, the prophet that should come into the world. So you would think that's a good thing, right? They recognize Him as the prophet. I think we could also say they recognize Him here as the Messiah. While we think that was a good thing, Jesus didn't necessarily perceive it that way. Because there in verse 15, when Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take Him by force to make Him a king, He departed again into a mountain, Himself alone. You know, one of the things that I find interesting about this is Jesus came to be a king. We know that. Jesus came, of course, to be a spiritual king because His kingdom was not of this world. But here the people were ready to make Him a king. What I find it's interesting here is the idea of molding. As Christians, should we allow God to mold us? As Christ comes into the world and as Christ gives us His teaching, we then can be molded into His, and into an image of Him, if you will, or into a disciple of His. But what do men often try to do? Men often try to mold God into the image that they want Him to be. And it's interesting, I think here we have an example of this. They were going to take Jesus and mold Him into who they wanted Him to be. That wasn't what Jesus came to be. He didn't come to be their king in terms of them establishing a kingdom and he becoming their king. He was going to go with the kingdom that God had established for Him, to be a king in that sense. But there in verse 15, we find then that He departed from them because they were going to make Him a king. You know, and just taking that for a moment, in our own lives, do men still today try to mold God into their own image? When I say their own image, I'm not talking into our physical image, but into the image that they want Him to be. Too often, we as humans try to, well, we do lose sight of the fact that God needs to mold us. We need to be molded in His image, but instead we try to mold God into who we think He should be. In a sense, then, we take Him, and instead of Him being the God, we mold Him into what we want Him to be, and then we basically become our own gods, in a sense.
And He's the potter. He's the clay, and we're the potter.
Exactly.
When you think about it like that, that makes sense.
And do you see that kind of being the, well, at least the, I think the impetus or the initiation of that is seen here. They were going to form him into what they wanted him to be, but that's not who he was. All right, any other brief comments on that? You know, and I don't want to get off on this too much, but I will make one brief comment, or try to keep brief on this. You know, I think an example of this is the holiday now that many people will be observing. You know, there are a lot of people who may not go to church a lot, but during the month of December, they will go. I don't really know all the details about Advent, but you've got Advent that starts, is that the first Sunday of December? But anyway, there's a lot of people who put an emphasis on several things in relation to the Christmas season. And in a sense, we find, of course, in the 300s, as Constantine was trying to establish Christianity to be the faith, what did he do with Christianity? Did he begin to mold it into the image that he wanted it to be? And the church was then in some ways changed. And I think we've done the same thing in some ways with Christ, with the perception of Christianity, with Christ and his birth. While it can be a very good thing that people do recognize God, just as here it was a good thing that they recognized that he was the prophet and the Messiah, but it's not a good thing when we become the potters rather than the clay. Now, I think all of this does connect as we continue on then. Okay, so we've established here in John chapter 6 the feeding of the 5,000, the miracle that Jesus performed. They then were looking for him the next day, but he's gone off by himself, as we saw in verse 15. The other disciples have gone across the river, or I should say the sea, and he goes to them on the water. Verses 15 to 21 talks about them going across the sea, a storm rising, Jesus then walking across the sea as well and coming into them in the boat. I'm not going to focus much on that, but I'm going to come on down in verses 22, 3, 4, 5. They're looking for him and they can't find him. And so now they cross the sea as well and come over to where Jesus has crossed to. Pick up with verses 26 and 27. As they basically ask him first in verse 25, Rabbi, when did you come here? How did you get here? These ideas. And Jesus responds to them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, you seek me, not because you saw the miracles, but because you did eat the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perishes, but for the meat which endures unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give you. For him has God the Father sealed. And so here we have the idea of they were seeking him because he could provide food for them. You know, I don't know the details of this, but in some things I was reading recently, it had commented that at the time, it may have taken as much as 80% of their budget to get their food. Now, I mean, again, you would think that they would provide their own food. I don't know how all that would have worked. But, you know, we probably, in comparison to them, food is a lot more readily available to us. For them, food was a very difficult thing to find at times. And so as Jesus comes, he could be a food source for them. And that was something that they looked to him as. And he's telling them, don't look for the food. The reason you're looking for me now and the reason you're listening to me is because you think I can provide food for you. But you're missing the main point. And that is, I can provide food which endures unto everlasting life. And that's what you need to focus on rather than the food which will perish. Now, having said that, I believe that connects with what we were saying earlier. They were trying to mold Jesus into what they wanted him to be able to provide physical blessings for them. But he was trying to point out to them his frustration with them in their lack of understanding in terms of the true spiritual sense that he brought. Any comments on any of this so far? You can certainly make other comments too, and I'll pause in a minute. But as we continue with this discussion a little bit then, as he is sharing with them that they're missing the point in these things, they then ask him, they seem to be interested, they seem to have somewhat of an understanding of what he's saying. How then will we work? How can we work the works of God? And Jesus tells them that the work of God is to believe on him who has been sent. All right, and so what sign are you going to show us? They ask him in verse 30. Because, verse 31, you know, our fathers ate manna in the desert. He gave them bread from heaven to eat. And so here was what God did for our fathers. He provided them bread. He provided them manna from heaven to eat. It's interesting how Jesus responds then. He responds not comparing himself to Moses, but he responds by comparing himself to the manna that truly came from heaven. Now we know in other places he is compared to Moses too, but not in this. In 32, Jesus said, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but your Father gives you the true bread from heaven. The bread of God is he who comes down from the heaven and gives life unto the world." And they then say, "Well, give us this bread." And now Jesus makes the real point in this. He a moment ago has said, yes, the Lord, your God, had sent manna to your fathers. He helped to sustain them. But now he's done something much greater to you. He has sent you the true bread from heaven. And so he says very particularly, very specifically here, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes on me shall never thirst." So we get to the very core of why we're here. Yes, all of these other aspects are important, and I believe they help to establish the basis of this. But now we find that Jesus describes himself as the bread of life. So, what does that mean? Well, we find, of course, that just as we need bread to eat, Jesus provides the spiritual bread that we need. I mentioned a moment ago that this is not something we just look at. It's something that we need to ingest. We need to put into our mouth. We need to swallow, spiritually speaking, or figuratively speaking here again. And then we digest this. As we digest Christ, if you will, as we digest this bread of life, he is truly the bread of life. As those who come to him will not hunger, and those who believe on him shall not thirst. Let's pause and get your own perspectives and comments on that. What do you see? What is the significance of Jesus being the bread of life?
Well, bread is a support or a sustenance for a physical body. Of course, Jesus is that support for us. And it's interesting when we started out the 1st of John, what did it say? Jesus was the Word. So that's how we eat it. That's how we eat of him. But as you said, ingesting or taking in, internalizing his word. That's what supports our and helps us to grow spiritually.
This doesn't exactly answer your question, but I was noticing it's interesting how Jesus proves these sort of things to them. Here he proves that he is the spiritual bread of life by demonstrating that he can physically feed thousands of people, and that's what makes him believable. And he does basically the same thing over in Mark chapter 2 when the four men lower their friend down into the house and Jesus says, "Your sins are forgiven." Well, he proves that he has the ability to heal spiritual disease by showing that he can heal physical disease. And that's what gives him credibility. I just thought that was interesting how he does the same thing in both places.
And really, most of these examples of where he says, "I am this," has been preceded by a miracle that he did or something else, some other circumstance. But the miracles and the teaching here very much go hand in hand. And I appreciate the idea of, as you said, feeding the 5,000 physically and then comparing that to being fed spiritually.
He normally does these physical things first to make the point and quickly follows it up with the spiritual. I think that's probably a good pattern for us as well as we're trying to identify and connect with people to share our faith with them, is that we need to make some type of a connection with them that is spiritually related. It may have an earthly impact, but it's spiritually related, and we're looking for that opportunity to tie in the spiritual necessity to them.
And one of the main verses we've looked at is the idea, and Jesus did many other things, many other signs, many other miracles to them. But these are written that you might believe. And so in many cases, it goes back to the idea of what they see first helps them to believe. And then the teaching follows and helps to solidify it. And here we're hoping to digest the idea of Jesus being the bread of life. Other comments or thoughts?
Kevin, another thing I was thinking, for these people at the time, to feed ourselves. We have more than enough food. But like you mentioned, these Jews, that was, I don't know if it was a struggle necessarily, but, it wasn't like food was so easy to come by. And so hearing someone teach that they could provide eternal food, and that they would never be hungry again, they'd never be thirsty again, even if they didn't quite understand what that meant, that would have really caught their attention, because that was something they dealt with on a daily basis, wondering where their food would come from.
Sometimes we lose sight of the fact that there are still a lot of people, apparently even within our own country, though, that still do struggle with food. I mean, if you follow the idea, in Springfield and throughout the country now, there is a strong emphasis on providing food for those who are in poverty. I mean, if you go into the schools, they provide free breakfast and they provide this and that. Because, according to information, there may be as many as 10-20% of kids who may not eat a whole lot over the weekend when they're not at school. I mean, these are things that are said. So while I appreciate what you're saying, and for most of us that's not been a struggle, it's not as if that's still not a struggle on a regular basis for people that we know or people that are in our area too. And of course, throughout the world, that's still an issue too in a lot of countries as well. There's more that could be said on this, and we'll go ahead and move on for now. And of course, we can go on. There's much more in this chapter relating to this as well. But as we're trying to cover two or three of these in a session right now, and again, as far as I'm concerned, if you want to continue to make comments too, that'll be appropriate. But one of the main purposes for us here is to simply allow this to sink into our minds. Because it's often we see this and we know the Bible teaches this, but we may not allow, it may not have become as much a part of us as it could. May we always remember that Jesus is the bread of life. Let's go ahead and go on over to John chapter 8 when we see the next one, where we find that Jesus is, he says, I am the light of the world. Now, just a brief comment before this, and we could go back into chapter 7. I think there may be some areas there. But in particular, it's interesting, right before he says, I am the light of the world, we find the example of the woman caught in adultery. This story that we all know, how that she was caught in adultery and there were those who were ready to accuse her. They asked Jesus what they should do. And of course, he who is without sin asked to cast the first stone. All right? And so, in verse 12, as he begins, this again is right after this, at least in the context of the book of John. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. You know, right here, this verse is kind of, I don't want to say it's by itself, but there's not a whole lot necessarily right before or right after it. But as the light of the world, of course, we know that, and as I started this session on John, I didn't emphasize a whole lot about being the light from chapter 1, because earlier I had emphasized it when I taught the summary idea. But this all goes back to the beginning of John as well. We know that he was the true light that came into the world. And he shone in the darkness, but the darkness comprehended him and accepted him not. I am the light of the world. So you picture, and you know, and if you think about their time, there was a lot of darkness in their time. There was light only for however many hours there were, and then when the sun went down, without electricity, and I mean, and some of us can even remember back into that time frame, and certainly within just the last 50 years, things have changed with that. Maybe 100 years, you could go back farther as well. But for many people that have lived in life, when the sun went down, it became dark. And when you are in darkness and you can't see really anything around you, I have a feeling that their perspective of life is a little different than ours. Because in general, while we have been around darkness and we're not big fans of darkness necessarily, We also have lived a life of light because we can turn on the electricity in so many ways. But if you think about Jesus and his time, and he came to a people that, number one, when that sun rose, does that in a sense show the glory of God, the sun itself? The sun itself shows the glory of God. Without that sun, what would our earth be like?
It'd be dead.
Exactly, yes.
have vegetation, we wouldn't have heat, we'd be dead.
That light brings life. And so as the sun, S-U-N, brings life and brings light, so also we find Christ, Jesus, bringing that same life and light. And just as if there were no sun, and when the sun goes down, it is totally dark, and Jesus came into a world that was also totally dark. But he brought life. I am the light of the world. Of course, we reflect that light too. You know, I'm going to go ahead and share with you Ephesians chapter 5, verses 8 and 9. You might turn over with me. It's interesting what we find here. And here we're bringing ourselves, humans, into it. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 8. For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Now it's interesting here, it doesn't say that you were in the darkness, and now you're in the light. It says you were once darkness. Without God, we are darkness. It doesn't say we're like darkness or we're in darkness, but we are darkness. But as we become children of God, as we become children of light, if you will, now we are light in the Lord. We are also light in the world to others. Walk as children of light. To me, that's kind of an interesting connection here. We are also, we were darkness, now we are light. And all of that is true, and all of that is because Jesus is the light of the world. A very, very dark place until Jesus comes in. The light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. Without that light, can we make our way at all? If we're in total darkness, if there's anything in front of us, we will stumble or run right into it. But with light, we know how to walk. We follow with that light. You know, earlier, here's the connection I want to make with what I just said too. Earlier, we talked about we talked about the bread being something internal within us. Initially, I had described the light as being external, because the light does externally help us to see what's going on. But is that light also internal? That light is very much internal. That's why I shared Ephesians chapter 5, verse 8. You were darkness. Inside you and inside me is darkness without Christ. But now, as He has provided light, and as we follow that light, now we also are light. And we can walk as children of light. So this light is in a sense an external type thing, but it's also very much an internal aspect. And that's, to me anyway, an important aspect of this, both in bread being internal, light being internal. May we be changed internally to be able to then reflect that externally also. Other comments or thoughts about Jesus as the light of the world?
In the ninth chapter, when he said, he follows that up and said, as long as I'm in the world, I'm the light of the world.
And it's interesting, when he is no longer in the world, in a sense, is he still the light of the world?
Really, I'd say it appears that he is.
I would say so. Yes. I would say that he is still, but now, in a sense, we are the light of the world, but not because it is internal within us. It is because it has been reflected in us and then internally. I mean, because he is inside us, we can reflect that also. And of course, there's many passages about light. I really wasn't even planning to use this, but the one passage that I really, really appreciated over the years is 2 Corinthians chapter, trying to see if it's 3:18 or 4:6. 2 Corinthians 4:6. But God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, has shined in our hearts to give the glory of the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. To me, a very powerful verse that connects with this. God commanded the light to shine out of darkness, and now he has shone in our heart to give us the light of the knowledge of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Other comments or thoughts? Again, with these can be expanded upon to take easily a whole class in and of themselves. But also, as we will continue to move on then at this stage. From John chapter 8, where Jesus says, I am the light of the world, we'll move on to John chapter 10. We see down in verse 7 is where it specifically says, I am the door of the sheep. We'll pick up, we won't necessarily read the first few verses, but at least kind of go through and consider what's being said. And we will kind of glance through it and read parts of it at least. In John chapter 10, verily I say unto you, he who enters not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber. But he who enters in by the door to the shepherd of, the door is the shepherd of the sheep. My eyes are a little fuzzy at the moment. To him the porter opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and they call his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. And when he puts forth his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And a stranger they will not follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of a stranger. And then we see in verse 7 that Jesus says, I am the door of the sheep. Let's connect this back to chapter 9. In chapter 9, we find that Jesus has healed a blind man. Now, the blind man is perfectly happy to accept this healing. He's excited about it. But what are the leaders? What do the leaders of the Jews think about this as Jesus heals the blind man?
I think they're worried about their own authority, their own power.
Okay.
They think Jesus has done this by some other power.
Okay. So they question his parents. You know, do you know anything about this? And they basically say, well, he is our son. We know he's been blind for a number of years. Exactly how he was healed, we don't know. Well, they couldn't get the right answer that they wanted from the parents, so they go to him. And he basically says, hey, you know, I was blind, I am healed, and this is the one who did it. Now, they, of course, were trying to convince him otherwise, if you will, and they put him out of the temple, if I remember correctly. I didn't read through the details of this in preparation for this part, but I did know that this is a great connection to this. Because here were the leaders. What were the leaders trying to do? The leaders, in essence, were trying to discredit Jesus. And of course, if Jesus is the bread of life, if he is the light of the world, if he is the Son of God, to discredit Jesus is headed down the wrong path. Are these leaders then those who are truly good shepherds, or are they hirelings that's brought out here? Okay? And so as we read this and as we gain what we find in the first few verses of John chapter 10, I believe it's all within the context of the leaders and how they were treating the blind man and how they had rejected Jesus on this too. I mean, you see in verse 37, 38 is kind of how Jesus is coming back. You go back to verse 35. All of this, and the last part of this, is him coming back to the blind man and talking with him. Verse 38, the blind man has said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. Verse 39, judgment. I am come into the world that those who see might be made blind. Of course, the Pharisees and the leaders thought they could see very well. But they were blinded to the fact that Jesus was the Christ. And so we see here, as we read the first few verses here, Jesus is talking about the shepherds of that time. The shepherds of that time, the leaders of the people, who in many ways were as hirelings. They did not necessarily have the best interest of the sheep at heart. Okay? And so Jesus is very much in contrast to that. And so when we see here, Jesus said to them, verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and he shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes not but for to steal and to kill and to destroy. I am come that they might have life, and that they may have it more abundantly. So just to kind of discuss this some, well, we're running short on time. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes. Any comments that you might have in relation to this? Doesn't really do me a whole lot of good to make too many comments on that and then cut it off right at that stage. We'll begin next week and pick this up again. Any comments on any of these?
The door is an access. And Jesus said, I am the way, all over in the 14th chapter of John. So that's access. And then in Ephesians it also talks about Christ provided access unto God.
Right. I mean, in a sense, what we have here is we have a sheepfold. And in the sheepfold, what happens to the sheepfold? Well, you've got some that may be trying to get in other ways. Some people climb over the fence. But basically, there's one way into the sheepfold. Correct? The sheep are protected. Who truly can protect the sheep? Is it the shepherd that doesn't have their best interests at heart? Or is it truly Jesus? He is the door of the sheep in the sense that they have access only by this door. There's also a reference here of going in and out. The sheep can be in the fold here. They can also go out into the pasture. Whether they go in or out, they're going in through Jesus. As we, if we were to connect that in terms of the kingdom now into the church, there is the way, the truth, and the life, who is Jesus, and connects to this. He is the door by which we go in as sheep into the sheep fold, by which we are protected as well. He is the one who we can go in and out among as well, and will help in this effort. Again, there's more that can be said. That's all I'll say at the moment. Any last comment that you might have?